game site about nothing. The Kronk Games Podcast. In the mid-2000s, two nerds with a website tried to make it last. Welcome to the dance.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to A Game Side About Nothing, the Kronk Games Podcast. I am Ray. That is Alex.
Hello to you.
Alex, are you ready to talk again about this silly old website?
Yes. Hang on, though. I need to tell you right off the bat. Folks coming off of the latest episode of the No More Whopper show will know this already. I'm still somehow jet lagged after being back in Japan for a week. It's not good. It is okay. Difficult. Yeah. So if I'm slow or dumb, it's me not having good brain.
I see. It's only because of jet lag.
Yeah. You know what? All the dumb things I said over the past few years, it was also jet lag.
All right, everybody, here's Alex.
Right.
I have adult onset jet lag. I do it's get angry bad. A lot. I'm too tired to get angry.
Oh, well, that's a boon for me.
Yeah, it is.
Well, then, let's roll right into this.
Let's have fun. Okay.
Today's episode is kind of a twofer. We're going to talk about two different things, but they are very closely related. First of all, you know, as we've been discussing, this is the story of our old website, where you and I wrote stupid video game articles for about a year or two.
Yeah.
Thank you. Please go ahead and acknowledge the things I say. That's part of the discussion.
That thing that you said about the site, that was really accurate. Because we wrote things and then we uploaded them to the site.
Yes. And
FTP, everybody.
And yes, most of the time it was you and me, although we did get some of our friends to help out.
That's right.
And we also got one of our friends to just be around. And I'm talking, of course, about Joel. We're going to talk now about Joel, our friend Joel Latissure, who is a Canadian man and was essentially just one of our friends from IRC who we just roped into the Kronk Games universe.
Yeah. You just made me realize something just now, and it's that we were mispronouncing his last name as a joke, because up until now, I did think it was Leducer.
Oh my god. Well, see, many revelations will come in this series after 20 years. Yeah. Worry not. Now, okay, now here's the thing. We wanted to have Joel on the podcast with us today.
Yes.
I prodded him a couple of times, but ultimately he was not comfortable podcasting. He just didn't want to do it.
I understand, because look how it's twisted us.
Exactly. I tried to reassure him. Told him that he'd be in a safe space. We weren't going to like openly make fun of him or anything. It was
not for the first few minutes, at least. Yeah.
It was supposed to be a recollection of good times. But he still wasn't up for it. And there's really nothing I can do but respect that. I mean,
I get it. It's
I'm in no position to force him. It's not like we live next door or anything. I can't walk over to his house and grab him by the ear and go, "You sit down right here at this microphone, mister."
What a sitcom that would be. He bursts into our apartment like Kramer every day. Yes. Also, in that fantasy, we live together.
Yes. Well, that's the thing, is that Joel, you know, as we brought him along on our Kronk Games adventures, he was up for a lot.
Yes.
And I have to admit, I'm a little bit disappointed that he didn't want to join us today, but it's his decision. It's fine.
Yeah.
It's cool. We're still friends. There's no big deal about it. Nevertheless, we can go ahead and talk about him behind his back. How about that?
Hey!
No, like I said, Joel was basically one of our friends from IRC. Originally, I would say your friend from IRC, because you had been on the server that the GIA channel had been on for a few years before I joined. And so I think there was a, would you call it a fan channel of GIA fans, or was it mostly just a melange of different nerds? I'm talking about Fret.
It was very specifically the GIA fan channel, because it was Andrew Vestal's response to Relax, which was the RP Gamer fan channel.
Okay, I see. I never knew
so
that.
So he made a choice. He was like, well, what's the opposite of relax, fret?
I see.
So that became the GIA fan channel. I didn't hang out in fret that much. I mostly hung out in a channel called Posters Refuge.
Right. So that, yeah, it was those two things. I think fret was like the first thing, and then some other splinter group of people went into this Posters Refuge. Do I have that right?
Yeah.
Well, how would you characterize it?
I think Posters Refuge was unrelated to fret. I mean, there was some crossover, but it was me, Joel, a guy named Ben, BDS Chaos, a guy named Mandoric, who we were supposed to hang out with at Otacon, but the last time I went to Otacon, and he needed a place to stay, so I said he could stay with us at our campsite. And then when we got to Otacon, I realized we never exchanged contact info. We had no way to contact each other. I just thought I would walk around the show floor and find him and be like, oh, there you are. Let's go to the campsite like a child does.
Well, you see, Alex, when you make a verbal agreement, it's still an agreement you have to follow up on.
Yeah, after the first day, I put a note on one of the bulletin boards like, hey,
have you seen this man?
If you do see this, we're going to wait outside at the end of the day for like a half hour. So be there, I guess. And then I think once we got back to civilization after the show, he was just kind of miffed on IRC. Like, come on, man. Yeah, we totally didn't establish any kind of. He was in there. Jeremy Steimel was in there, who was he headed up the first GIA fan site that I wrote for. This was like 99 or 2000, called The Gold Saucer, which we covered briefly.
Right. Yes, as mentioned. Yeah.
It was a loose collection of those friends of GIA fans who wanted to do their own site and then didn't. And then it just I think Andrew Kaufman hung out there a lot as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because yeah.
That sounds like him. Hanging out with nearly everybody.
That's right. And then I don't know if I'm thinking of the same channel or what, but I think I was also
shamelessly.
I very briefly dated a girl in Cleveland named Caitlin. And we dated for like, I don't even know if it was dating. It was.
I think you hooked up is the proper term.
We did. There was a physical element. I only visited her a couple times to stay the night. And then I was going to visit. This is the big conclusion to this relationship. I made her a batch of cookies for Valentine's Day. I was in my baking phase, thanks to Alton Brown, I think, at the time.
Yeah.
And I like packed these cookies and I was ready to go to her place for a Valentine's weekend. And I said, what time should I show up? And she said, oh, I'm spending Valentine's with my boyfriend. I was like, oh, okay. Yeah, makes sense. That's fine. So then I just stayed home and ate all the cookies myself.
Okay.
Yeah. But yeah, I think she hung out in there for a while. Yeah, it was a very loose collection of Espernet randos.
All right. Yeah.
Yeah.
That sounds about right.
Including Joel.
Yeah. And so I was, I guess, introduced to that channel at some point as well.
I may have roped you in, yeah.
You may have roped me in. And so I got a feel for the gang, including Joel. Joel just kind of became like a friend, first of all. And then, just a guy, another one of the guys that we joked around with, you and I. I joked around with you. You joked around with me.
There was lots of joking.
And Joel just became sort of this third person to joke with. And so we just put Joel on Crunk Games for really no clear reason. Just he was a guy that we knew.
Yeah, we just thought of him as like a goofy guy.
In some ways, I guess, you know, an outside observer might say, oh, Joel was like the mascot in some ways. And
the original angst monkey.
No, they were both around at the same time.
Oh, right. Okay.
I suppose Joel was the physical manifestation of a mascot that we had. Sure. I mean, I would just...
A manscot, if you will.
Okay. Yeah. That's pretty good. Yeah.
All right.
I'd place him as our Carl Pilkington.
Okay, sure.
You know, Ricky Gervais and Stephen Merchant's guy.
Yeah.
Another guy that they know.
Yeah.
And who became sort of a good-natured laughingstock in some ways. But we just sort of put Joel as this third staff member of Crunk Games, but he didn't actually write anything.
No.
Joel never materially contributed anything to Crunk Games other than being in photos, which we'll talk about. But he wasn't intending to be a writer. We didn't intend for him to be a writer. And so he did not write anything. but as this sort of mascot-ish, manscot-ish character, I sort of turned him into a pervert character who wrote at least one feature, which has since been unpublished because, yeah, I could have been cleaner with the whole thing, but it was Joel's PS2 Poonstravaganza or whatever it was. And it was just a...
Oh, no.
It was an excuse to cover a few of these PS2 games that had come out that had featured gravure idols. And so there was like motion gravure with a few different bikini models.
Oh,
and
my God.
Was,
wait, I remember
like that.
You also made little Joel icons with surprised faces and a fake mustache. What was the origin of that? It still makes me laugh.
Was it a fake mustache? I just put MS Paint bug eyes on him as a rating scale.
I seem to remember you also put like a fake mustache on him at one point, like he was trying to do it anonymously very poorly. No, am I misremembering?
Oh God, I don't even properly.
Maybe I'm misremembering, but that seems.
Did it even go up? I don't know. Yeah. So, well, that was part of us just using Joel as sort of this figure. Now, the other thing, part of the jokiness and sort of, I guess you'd call it memifying. We were sort of memifying Joel in our own little bubble, our Crunk Games bubble.
Yes.
And so a lot of that was born from the IRC japes. You know what I mean? So like, yes. I would find a picture of like a toy bike in a Sunday circular, I think for Target or something.
That's right.
And the you already know what
it's
I'm doing.
It's in my mind right
it's
now.
It's indelible is what
oh
it is.
Oh my God.
And the picture of the kid riding this bike with this, you know, in this, even in this low DPI printed photo, I'm like, that looks like Joel.
It looked like Joel.
It looked like Joel in a bike helmet. With his mouth wide open in happiness. It looked enough like Joel that I just, you know, Photoshopped that out and just made sort of, you know, a meme picture out of him. And I believe I used that even in one of our E3 headers. That's right. E3 2005. I'm skipping ahead, but our E3 2005 photo album, Crunk Games E3 2005, Dawn of Joel's.
That's amazing. That's right.
One of those pictures there.
I remember. So that's a reference to Final Fantasy Dawn of Souls.
Yes.
GBA. Which, came out of the GBA. Was that a 2004 release or was that 2003? Because I remember that was the very first Japanese game I bought when I studied abroad in Japan in 2004. So I had it in my mind it was a 2004 release. I guess it had already been announced by then.
Yeah, it was already out at the end of 2004 in this country.
Three?
My country. What?
You mean 2003?
No, four.
Oh.
Final Fantasy 1 and 2.
Right. Okay. So
for GBA.
My point is, you called it that, Dawn of Joel's, based on the announced title. The game itself wasn't out yet.
No, it was out because this was for E3 2005.
Oh, five. I'm sorry. I thought we were talking about 2003.
We will, but well, I had to jump ahead to explain the meme picture.
I see. I was all mixed up, but now I'm better.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm saying I used that photo of non-Joel bike kid as one of the pictures in this thing.
I like it.
I think that kid wore braces too. Joel didn't, but I mean, again, it came off Joel-y enough that I was just like, that's him. We got to use this. Just like, and use it I did. But
do you remember we also memed Nick's hat quite a lot? He had a nice plaid hat that I think we photoshopped onto Joel at one point.
I think that was more of an internal thing.
Yeah. Okay.
Because I don't think Nick liked being poked fun at a whole lot.
No, I don't think so. In retrospect, I feel pretty bad about just kind of being a dick all the time.
I mean, we did, well, you know, we didn't fully understand, and you know, it's, you know. People like, you know, there's people who are not going to be completely in on or want to participate in the japery.
Yes. Yeah. My erroneous assumption at the time was, everyone goofs around the same way that we do. So this is totally normal for other people. And it's really not.
That is pretty much the crucial failing of our whole game thing is that everybody's like this.
Yeah, no. we all get this, right? Okay, cool. Let's go.
Yeah, we all get this. We all use this word, right? No, we don't.
No.
No, Ray, we don't.
Whoopsie daisy.
not everyone's like this.
No, yeah, it's
not everyone's in on it.
It no, it's just, it feels like an extension of, you know, me growing up in a bubble, which is a lot of that. It's a lot of, oh, everyone understands my experience and what I do and go through, and so yeah, everyone will be receptive to my very specific kind of humor.
Yeah.
This is just the internet version of that.
Yeah, and so, you know, I didn't actually want to hurt Nick in any way, because he was my friend, and I still consider him one, so that was ugh.
My parents told me to clean out some boxes in the garage when I was over there for Thanksgiving, and I found, like, at least a half a dozen mix CDs that Nick had sent me. Yeah. And they're all, like, painstakingly crafted, like album art, both sides of the jewel case. In most cases, there's, like, a sticker on the disc itself with original stuff on it. Just very well put together. There was one... He made a mix CD specifically for me because my college connection caused me to ping out on IRC like every 5 minutes.
Uh-huh.
So like the album art was in the style of MIRC. It was, I have pictures. I'll send you pictures of it after we record. It's because I took pictures of every mix that I found. There wasn't luggage space to take them back. I should have ripped them while I was there, but I don't think my parents have a functional computer. But yeah, I still have them. I think next time I go back, I'm gonna make space in my luggage to take them with me because they're very cool.
Yeah, the GIA crew had a little bit of a mixed CD making and trading culture.
Yes,
which I did not really put myself into because I just wasn't interested and I wasn't big into music.
Yes, you have your own musical tastes.
And just generally, I'm just not that into music in the same way I would be appreciative of video games, for instance. So
yeah,
it just doesn't connect with me in that way. And so I didn't get really any of those mix CDs, I don't think. Anyway, this is already pretty light on Joel, so I want to keep talking about Joel because this episode is about Joel.
Right.
My point, anyway, in referencing all this stuff about being made fun of or being part of the group or whatever, is that even though I made this pervy article about Joel or as Joel, he didn't really seem to mind about any of that sort of stuff. Really. He was just kind of going along with it. And I believe he even mentioned once that his mom saw that article and laughed at it or something.
Oh no. Oh good.
So
okay.
Like his mom was cool with it or whatever. And, I think even at the time I was like, okay, not something I'm going to be showing to my mom. But go ahead, Joel. That's great. Okay.
Sure. Cool. Yeah.
I'm glad Joel's mom is cool.
Hi, Mrs. LaDucer.
But nevertheless, I still have to like ask why I did this, why we did this, because in terms of like treating Joel as sort of a punching bag in the friendliest way I could characterize that, it's just sort of still brings up the question of why. And I think, you know, in some ways I've treated you similarly, and I've treated other friends of when I was a kid similarly. And I think I just sort of had a propensity to make me and whoever friend it is into some sort of like Ralph Cramden, Ed Norton pairing, because that's what I thought was quote unquote funny. It's sort of what I learned throughout media and stuff. Not the Ed Norton from Golden 16 Seconds, but.
Oh, okay.
Ed Norton the analog to Ralph Cramden from The Honeymooners.
A lot more sense. Yeah. Okay.
And so, yeah, I did it in grade school, started to do it with Al, and then we just sort of both did it with Joel, I would say. And I still just don't really know why. I mean, I'm very thankful that Joel was at least cool with it, or at least externally cool with it.
Yes.
I don't know. I mean, he seems still like us. So, it could have been worse. But in part of the sort of emotional journey I've been having and thinking about this website and what we went through, it was just like, yeah, I feel like that was the last big time when I was trying to do that sort of like punching bag, sort of breaking your balls kind of stuff. And I've really tried to curb it. Of course, you and I are such good friends that it's sometimes hard to contain, but
it's fun. It's an enthusiastic show of affection that boy, not everybody knows how to interpret it because it's bizarre.
Yeah. I think it's a guy thing. A lot of it is just kind of a guy thing.
Yes.
It's just it's just what happens in a lot of male friend groups.
Yes. It's, I got into this on the Nomo show proper, but Jimmy Pardo recently guested on the 300th episode of
right.
Will Anderson's show, yeah. Willosophy, and he describes a
That's
lot of that.
That's where I stole that from, yeah.
Oh, really?
Yes, okay. I listened to it too.
Yeah, he describes a lot of how guys rib each other and talk to each other. I hate thinking about it that way, but he's right, because I don't typically like put downs and like insults. It's just that he does it real well, so it works. But, you know, I typically, I mean, I guess I do it to other people. And most, I guess I'm not aware of it most of the time that I do it, but
like
it's
bar
it's,
patrons who deserve it.
Bar, who does? Oh, I'll say that shit to your face if I don't like you, but it's very obvious. Yeah. But with friends as well. Like I'll poke fun at friends. You know, if I have I know a guy who's super into Hatsune Miku, I'll make fun of that shit every time I see him.
Okay. You know, it's, yeah.
That's just part of the bargain.
All right.
And I don't, you know, but I'm not, I don't do it from a place of hate. It's just, you know.
You just hate Hatsune Miku.
It's, why won't she grow up?
I don't know. I think she's quite mature. Yeah, I do think that is part of it. Just sort of a guy thing. But it's also like, I can trace it to things that, you know, sort of got absorbed in me from all the comedy stuff that I'd seen and heard throughout so many years. And so it just sort of was like, hey, it's fun to cut down this guy for laughs, isn't it? that sort of got manifested into how we treated Joel, I think. Now, I don't mean that in like a really hardcore sort of way. I'm just saying it is sort of the root of what happened with Joel in terms of Crunk Games. And so, but because he was cool with it, we just sort of rolled with it. All the meme pictures and stuff just sort of became a natural thing because Joel was the third guy on Crunk Games, and that was just how we were going to present him. Now, the funny thing about all this, and especially the fact that Joel didn't want to join us today, is that we got jokes from some of the other people at the GIA and stuff saying that Joel was probably just made up. They hadn't seen him. No one really knew who he was.
Yeah,
we just kept referring to a Joel, and eventually you're just like,
we kept saying he was our girlfriend in Canada.
Yeah,
I get it.
Yes, I do also want to mention that Joel's Canadian, and I guess for a period of time had gotten a job in Banff, Alberta.
Yeah, I was about to say, he's from popular Batman sound effect Banff.
Yes, and that is just one of the jokes we made about Banff, just the fact that Joel was from Banff, and it's funny to say Banff. And
it is, it's a great name.
That is pretty that's the long and short of it. That's just another one of those hollow little jokes.
There was also, was he also, is there also a place called Hearst?
Yeah.
Because I remember our pal Fritz made a Kingdom Hearts Photoshop that said Kingdom Hearst. And I seem to remember Joel may have been Photoshopped into that as well, which I found
Hearst,
utterly
Ontario.
Amazing.
Yes.
That's course. Right. Okay.
Yeah.
So, okay, no, it was, I think there were some other Fret folks who were from Hearst, from that area, so maybe that's what that was.
Right.
Anyway.
Oh, but really no one else poked fun at Joel, either.
No, but he was a fixture in Fret as well. He was well-known in Fret.
Yeah. It's just that on Crunk Games, he was ours, and so
that's right.
Our plaything. Uh-huh.
Right, we owned him.
Well, I wouldn't go that far.
Oh.
But he was definitely a part of us, mind, body, and soul. So, you know, we didn't want to just have Joel listed on the site and have him not do anything. We did want to give him a real opportunity and have him contribute something. And so, as Crunk Games was going on for a few months, guess what was rolling around? The next E3.
E3
2003. Was coming around. This is going to be the next part of our episode today. It's the Joel/E3 2003 episode. And what happened was, you know, it was just like, this is going to be the first time Crunk Games proper is going to be at E3. Now, the previous year, E3 2002, it was kind of us being the, you know, post-GIA group, but you and I were also doing stuff for Game Forms.
Oh, boy.
And so It was just a weird kind of E3, although it was exciting being our first, for you and me at least. Now, we just kind of wanted to give Joel that opportunity, and so we said, hey, Joel, you want to come with us to E3? And he said, yeah, sure, we'll do that. It will be the Crunk Boys hitting the town in L.A. for that week or whatever it was, going to E3. And that really worked out. I got a business license from the state of Washington to establish us as some sort of entity that would help us get into E3. I have a scan that's dated in December, but that doesn't line up with E3 or anything. But anyway, that was part of getting into E3 in a professional manner. If you wanted to be media, like, you needed proof that you were a business and all this stuff.
That's right.
And you would get a free media badge and get to pal around at E3 as best you could. And that somehow also included us going to the Nintendo press conference.
Yes, I don't know how that happened. Did we just register online?
I guess. Or did someone help us? I have no freaking clue, but that was also extremely exciting for guys who are 20 years old going to E3 for at least a second time.
Was that the one where Miyamoto came out with the Zelda sword and shield for four swords?
No.
Was that the one where Toru Iwatani was on stage for Pac-Man Versus?
Yes, Toru Iwatani, yes.
I was thinking Soru. I was preemptively saying, I'm Soru, I fucked that up.
No, he did the sword and shield
Soru's
later.
Soru's not even a name! Sorry, keep going.
Yes. when Twilight Princess was first shown, that was the next year.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
2003 was a lot of the sort of, we're trying really hard to sell the GameCube to you, but you also have to buy four Game Boy Advances to really get the most out of it.
Yeah.
And so that was Four Swords and Pac-Man Versus.
I got memories of the following year playing FF Crystal Chronicles in the dorm in Japan. It was like, it was just me and one other guy. It was so sad, and I hooked up my GBA. Yeah, it was not great.
Well, speaking of a dorm, I believe, it was Joel and us in a hotel room, but we also did have Nick join us. We were still palling around with Nick, and so he was there to hang out with us a couple of times.
Yeah,
this is all pretty well documented in our E3 2003 photo album on crunkgames.com. The very first picture in our gallery is our PS2s stacked on one another. You can see my ocean blue Japanese PS2.
Yeah. Oh, I found my Midnight Blue PS2 when I was home, and I did not have the luggage space, or I would have brought it back with me. It's still in pristine condition.
Exactly. There's a picture of Nick seemingly unpacking a bunch of GameCube stuff because we were gonna play whatever on GameCube, and this was when he was at Gamers.com, and so maybe he did help us do that.
Was I working that show?
I'm not sure.
I don't remember.
I don't know, because I think I was already fired, so.
Oh, no.
I don't
Wait, remember. From what?
No, remember? We were talking about this last episode, how I got let go from Gamers.com.
I don't remember that at all.
We talked about it on the last episode.
Oh.
Where.
Oh, yes. Okay. It's coming back. Yes.
Yes.
That's right.
Alex is tired today, folks.
I am sorry. I'm exhausted. I'm trying to keep up.
God knows how we actually were led into that Nintendo press conference, but we did get there. There's also a picture of the food spread that they had for people.
I don't remember that at all, for sure.
That was just really exciting because that was, like, also 2003, I think, was when press conferences started to have some more glitz put into them.
Yeah.
And so Nintendo stuff was a lot less like little hotel ballroom sort of drab thing. It was this year was more like lights and colored stuff and special guests. And
yeah, I stopped. I think what was my last E3, 2005, six. I was listening to an old episode of 30, 2010, where Brett Elston was talking about the E3 when Microsoft unveiled the Kinect, I guess 2009 ish. Mm-hmm. And he said, it was like they got Cirque du Soleil to do this $1 million performance, but like they sealed the room and it was like you couldn't leave to go to the bathroom and you had to sit there and watch this whole stupid thing. And what does it have to do with the Kinect? You know what I mean?
Well, the thing was that was not part of the press conference. That was a separate show they put on.
That was a separate show.
Yeah. they invited you to this experiential thing where you had to wear like a light up poncho.
Yes, that's right.
And go see a Cirque du Soleil performance. I never went. This is all also memories from, you know, third hand. But I do remember seeing stuff like that. I remember one anecdote about that. Someone said that they saw Tomonobu Itagaki from Tecmo, Dead or Alive at the time.
Okay, yeah.
Apparently he was given a poncho, walked in, looked up for a few seconds, then turned around and walked out.
That's how you do it.
Yeah. I went to the regular press conference before that. I think, yes, where they were talking about that. When it was still called Project Natal.
Oh, that's right.
And they didn't really have much else to show except Smoke and Mirrors fake demo stuff.
Cool.
It was the year after, I think, when they started to get into gear, when they actually needed to sell something. But yeah, the promise of Kinect was so great. Oh my goodness gracious. Yes, indeed. But in general, what I was saying is that around this time at E3 2003 and onward, like, that's when the press conferences became a big deal, because now everybody was fully aware that the entire press was going to videotape this stuff. And, you know, we all have digital cameras now, so it's all going to be uploaded pretty soon on their websites and stuff anyway. So they tried to make a bigger deal of it. That didn't stop Nintendo, though, from still showing pie charts.
It's what investors want.
Yeah. March system sales, Nintendo 58%, Sony 31%, Microsoft 11%.
All right. Better than Microsoft.
I'm sure that's not juiced in any way.
Hang on. Very quickly, I just want to back up to the food.
Okay. Don't back up into the food.
Oh, okay. What? Do you remember what was on that table?
There's a photo.
Okay.
The caption of the photo we wrote was, "Mini pizzas, chops off." And so there is apparently a guy scooping up mini pizzas from a platter there.
Okay.
It's a bunch of platters. And then, you know, at these things, they got the little bit, the platter that's on little legs that has all the fruit and cheese and stuff.
Okay.
But below that are the platters with all the good junky stuff. So, you know. The mini pizzas, for example, and what looked to be maybe pinwheels or something. I don't know.
Here's an idea for a character-based dish. Quinoapio.
Uh-huh, yeah.
That's all I got.
All right. At that Super Nintendo World at Universal Studios.
Hey, they're doing donkeys now.
They got all the hits. Yes, at press conference, they had Toru Iwatani and Miyamoto come on stage to talk about Pac-Man Versus. And then they had a four-player battle where they also invited on Will Wright.
Oh, the SimCity guy.
Yes.
Okay.
Because, you know, they're all pals.
Wait, did he also invent the airplane?
No, that was his dad.
Okay.
Yeah. Let's get that one going. How about that?
Yeah.
Get that rumor going. Oh, and that was also when they announced Super Mario Advance 4, Super Mario Brothers 3.
Yes, that's not confusing.
No, but it was what I was wishing would happen, because I loved the previous one where they ported Super Mario World, and I was just like, well, why are they going backwards? Well, they got to do Super Mario 3, because I love Super Mario 3. It's like one of my favorite games ever.
That's right.
And so they finally did that, brought that to Game Boy Advance.
Yes, I remember that. And I think Animal Crossing were the only times I seriously used the e-reader. And I guess most people.
Okay, yeah, right. So E3 2003, of course, at the LA Convention Center. We also took plenty of photos of the show floor. That included also an early look from Square Enix at Final Fantasy XI. I think it was the first time it was shown in English. The English release, because I think the Japanese version still had English in it. But yeah.
Yeah.
Stuff like Castlevania Lament of Innocence, River City Ransom EX. I'm just going through the gallery here that we posted. Final Fantasy Tactics Advance, stuff like that. And so a lot of fun. Like I said, I think a couple episodes ago, 2003, a pretty good year for gaming overall, just maybe not culturally, because there's still a lot of crazy misogyny floating around. But in terms of the actual game titles, it wasn't half bad. And so we took Joel all the way through it, and just had our time walking around the show floor every day. Joel in tow, Did I say that right? Should I say
Joel
it again?
Joel in Toll, yes.
Joel in Toe. There we go. Take a breath, Ray.
Joel Promo.
And then, yeah. And we just had an adventure there. And, of course, we made sure in this E3 and also every E3 gallery after that to split it up into three sections where we do a pre-show stuff, where we look at pictures of a press conference. We'd have all the on-the-show-floor stuff. And then a third section for just pure Crunk Games indulgence into our stupid idiocy, trying to be funny bullshit. And so that meant bringing Joel along for a lot of weird LOL sort of pictures.
They're great pictures. I think there's one of him just with his face smashed in a pillow.
Is that here? Let's see.
1 year, I believe. Or maybe that's you or me.
It was him, I think, but maybe then a year after.
Okay.
But plenty of pictures of Joel shirtless.
Cool.
There is a picture of me touching his butt. Ha ha ha.
Very nice. Good.
Great. Grand. Really good. Glad these are still on the internet. And then, us goofing around in Final Fantasy XI.
Were we typing Jerk City quotes into FF11 or was
someone
that
was.
Episode 3?
Someone okay. was. Yes. Yes, I think that was someone indeed. And there was a Canada booth at E3, and so we posed Joel in front of the Canada booth.
Of course.
I think we did that the next year as well, because you got to. yeah, that was the other thing, is that, Canada's so funny too, right? I think, not that I watched South Park a lot, but that was sort of, I think, a thing that South Park started, was that Canada's just sort of this other country that we all make fun of.
Oh, boy.
It was a dark time.
Hang on, did I still have my earring? Did I still have my stud?
I'm not sure. I'm going to go look.
I think in 2002 I did. I think by E3 2003 I might have gotten rid of it.
The answer is yes, you did. In 2003.
I did in 2003? Yeah. Wow. When did I get rid of it?
I don't know. You want to see it?
Yes, I do.
All right.
Paste that. Let me see that. Oh, yeah, there it is. Wow. That's okay, cool. Oh, my God. And I'm wearing a T-shirt that Nick made based on images in his Japanese textbook. Do you remember that?
No, I don't. I think the thing is that Nick was a bit better friends with you than me, although, just in general.
I love that shirt. Okay. Wow, look at this young idiot.
Yeah. Now, what were you thinking with the stud?
I was trying it out.
All right.
And I'm not against it. I'm not against doing it again, but it's, I don't know. It seems like extra maintenance I don't have time for.
Okay. Yeah, sure.
Let's back this way up. I first got my ear pierced in the third grade.
Okay.
My older sister took me to the mall and said, without my mom's knowledge, let's do this. You'll be the coolest kid in school.
Oh, my Lord.
And then I did it, and I was mercilessly mocked at school.
Oh, no.
So I just got rid of it almost immediately. And then another kid got his pierced like the next week and he was the coolest kid.
Yeah, I think the same sort of thing happened with me. Not that I got my ear pierced, but there is that kid who is more of the trendsetter. And
and that was not me.
Yeah, the cool kid who people follow more often. And yeah, that was not going to be me either.
Yeah. I don't know. It's
third grade.
I don't know. Then I got it pierced again right out of high school, right after high school. I think it was because I was trying to do like an image change, because it's like, that was high school me. That's the old me. Get ready for the new college, Alex, everybody. And it was just the same guy in a shitty wrapper.
I had my moments. I think I don't remember what year it is. Maybe we'll find it on the website. But I wore a little necklace, not like a
wow.
It's like a cloth necklace with beads on it and stuff.
Cool.
But before that, before you ever knew who I was, I did also try and be cool and get like a gold necklace. I was maybe 11.
Oh, wow. Yeah. I was doing jewelry, certainly. Yeah. I had a couple of rings in high school. I had a series of necklaces in high school. I had a beetle in glass that looked like amber that was my brother's necklace that I got from him. I had the PlayStation button necklace that my girlfriend made for me when my PlayStation controller broke.
Yes.
I think that's the extent of it.
Yeah, I think I was done with the cloth necklace by then, but yeah.
There were also, like, I never got really into, I know people who, like, paid a lot of money to get into the Japanese video game jewelry accessory scene.
Oh my, really? Really? Like who? Names right now.
I very briefly dated a girl in high school who, she imported everything FF7. She is the world's greatest FF7 super fan. She finished FF7 with a dance pad with her mom. Yeah.
All right.
And she had all the Cloud rings and necklaces and everything.
All right. Well,
And I think the only thing I imported was a Biohazard Zero Zippo lighter.
I took
that to E3 2002 or 3 because I was smoking. That's when I started smoking. I think.
Because of that lighter?
Not because of the lighter. Because I broke up with the girl who made the PlayStation necklace.
All right. Well, at least if it was because of the lighter, I'd understand. Jeez.
No, that's not a reason to start smoking for 2 decades. Is it?
You're kind of a nerd.
That's true.
I mean, look, if they made a Boku no Natsu Yasumi lighter, I'd start smoking.
Yeah, okay.
I'm kidding.
Boku no lighter. Cool.
Boku's all grown up. What were we talking about?
earrings. I'm working back to E3. This picture.
Why'd I say cloth necklace? It was a leather necklace. When I was
Yeah. I was trying to envision a cloth necklace, and I'm like, you mean a bandana? Were you a dog?
You know, I just meant not metal.
Okay. I did, in I think around 2003 or 4, I did buy a brown leather jacket with the wool collar like our pal Leon Scott Kennedy has in Resident Evil 4.
Okay,
and I found it on my recent trip home for Thanksgiving, and I brought it back to Japan with me, except I could not find the wool collar, so it's just a brown leather jacket.
And I, probably around the same time, but for a few years after 2003, I had a green jacket I got from Eddie Bauer that looked just enough like the jacket that the bad guy from FLCL wears.
Wow.
Then, you know, I took it with me all the way when I moved to San Francisco for 1UP. And I just remember walking to a party on like a foggy day, and Scott Sharkey's there, and he goes and sees me and just makes a joke about me looking like James Sunderland from Silent Hill 2 because I'm wearing this green jacket on a foggy-ass day. And, so that was about as bad as it got for me there, but, yeah.
That's not so bad. You're good.
No, I know. It's just a green jacket. It's not like I tried to look like the character that much, the anime guy, but no, you can tell I'm really still connected to FLCL because I certainly remember that character's name. Eyebrow dude.
Oh yeah. No, around 2003-ish, I was still trying to do things with fashion, but I had no idea what I was doing because I was just a nerd who lived by himself on a college campus with no friends. And I think I was just really into buying coats that I think video game characters had. Because I also bought this, like, olive green London Fog trench coat because it looks like the trench coat that, who's your dad in Shadow Hearts who wants to punch you to death?
Oh, yeah. No idea.
Not Yuri. Yuri's the main character. It's Yuri's dad, I think, has like a World War II Japanese officer's coat. And I even went so far as to, like, look for an authentic one online, not realizing, like, these aren't to wear. This is, like, memorabilia.
Yeah.
And I'm like, why can't I find any in my size?
Because they don't historical exist, artifacts.
Idiot. Yeah, these aren't for you to wear around campus, you fucking idiot.
It belongs in a museum.
So do you. I eventually just, like, you know, I went home for the holidays, and my mom took me shopping to the outlets, and there was this trench coat on sale at London Fog. I'm like, oh, Ma, I want that. She's like, okay.
Yeah.
So I had this super long, like, olive green trench coat that I still have. It's in my closet. Maybe I'll start wearing it. And then in like 2005 and 6, I realized, oh, this also looks like Big Boss's trench coat from the Yoji Shinkawa art in the Metal Gear Solid 1 strategy guide. And I bought a Foxhound patch with the intent of putting it on the arm. And then I think I chickened out at the last second. I put it on my bag instead. Maybe I'll still do that.
Maybe. Oh, I have another sort of example is that I really wanted the same watch that Ryo had in Shenmue.
Oh, boy.
The same exact Timex watch. I thought that would be so cool if I had that watch. Could never find an easy way to buy it online, though. But
that would be cool.
Maybe now, because it's vintage.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll see.
I don't know.
So anyway, back to E3.
Yes. Sorry, I'm doing a lot of tangents this episode.
That's okay. We need the time to fill. Since Joel isn't here. No, I'm just kidding.
Joel, we love you.
Yeah, we really needed some insight, but it's okay. It's all right. I'm not going to be bitter. Anyway, just stalling for a second because I wanted to go on to our next E3 story, which is that us as Crunk Games trying to be professional and a media organization, not really, it's just us doing a stupid fan site. We thought we could get on the press lists, press email lists for a lot of these companies. And during the lead up to E3, I got a PR email, basically spam, but it was something sent out to all the press people from Simon & Schuster Interactive, which was a thing that happened. I can't believe it. The book company decided to start making video games. That was also a weird thing in the early 2000s, where you had companies like Simon & Schuster deciding to make games. There was TDK, the blank tape company, decided to publish video games.
What?
Yeah. Terrible games. Not any of them were any good. TDK. Oh, my God. But we got this PR email saying that Steve Carell, who was the announcer of Outlaw Volleyball.
Okay.
And I believe previously Outlaw Golf.
Okay.
Would be available for meetings, interviews at E3.
Boy, there were a lot of sports that were skirting the law back then.
Yeah.
I don't think I like this.
A lot of criminals in here. I don't think that's...
Yeah, that seems like a negative trend here. I think we need to abide by the rules, especially in sports.
Yeah. I saw this email. I saw Steve Carell. I was like, well, here we go. We can interview Steve Carell, who we love on The Daily Show.
We knew him mostly from The Daily, because we would watch it together.
Yeah.
I think we mostly knew him as Produce Pete.
Yes.
And showing up to do remotes using remote quotes.
And of course, Even Steven.
Even Steven's one of my favorite segments on the show.
Reality-based TV. Does America really need more?
Yes.
No.
Yes.
Yeah.
There's so much gold on that show that's just buried forever.
Absolutely. I think you probably find it on Comedy Central's website. They have a lot of different clips of classic Daily Show, but yeah, good luck.
They don't have a complete archive, do they?
I probably not. I don't know.
Oh, man.
I found one segment I wanted to see from long ago, miraculously, but yeah. Yeah, so we knew Steve Carell from The Daily Show. I forgot he was on The Dana Carvey Show, which I also loved. But
I forgot there was a Dana Carvey show.
The sketch show on ABC.
That's right.
Yeah. There's a great documentary about it now.
Is that the one that always had a different sponsor?
Yes.
Okay, yeah. That's okay, right. Yeah, I do remember that.
Yeah, so him and Colbert were on there as well. Then they moved on to The Daily Show.
Right. Yes, wait, was that the one where they did the skit, Waiters Who Are Nauseated by Food?
That is correct.
Yes! Okay, that's a great skit.
Yep.
All right.
And Germans Who Say Nice Things.
That's yes. I remember that. I remember Carell doing that bit on Letterman,
and the beginning of the Ambiguously Gay duo.
Yes.
Yeah.
Wow.
Boy, talk about Ambiguously Gay. Another stupid part of our senses of humor.
There was also it didn't help that early mid 2000s humor was just that cranked to the max. It was what if they were gay?
Yeah.
SNL did not help that. SNL went through a phase of about a decade starting in the mid to late 90s where every punchline was just gay.
Yeah.
It was, what if gay?
And hey, guess what? There's a picture of me touching Joel's butt. So
yeah, there we go.
There's your evidence.
That's fine.
So I thought we were going to interview Steve Carell. This is great. I told him, put me on the list. Let's go. I now recently found the boilerplate questions I wrote in a couple of documents.
Oh boy.
questions for Steve Carell that I wrote alongside questions for other interviews, just in case I, let's say, ever interviewed a Goichi Suda or Kazai Abe at some point. That would that last one will never happen. But I wrote these stupid interview questions, just pure mindless stuff to just try and get something out of Steve Carell, because I knew he wasn't going to be talking up gamer stuff the whole time, but I had to get, I had to think of something, you know, that would be somewhat appealing to him as a guy being forced to sit in an interview at E3 or something. So here are my questions that I wrote for Steve Carell, perhaps. Number one, How did you come upon doing the announcer gig for these Outlaw games? How long were the recording sessions?
Oh, boy.
Are you big on games yourself? How about volleyball? Have you played the game yet? And if he says yes, I'll follow up with, well, since there's a fair bit of comedy in the game, did you have any modicum of input at all in the design of it?
No.
I don't think I would actually say it as written, but that's what I wrote. Have you ever been out of this booth or room at all today or what? By any chance, are you going to be in Outlaw Golf 2 as well? Spoiler, no. But you've been a busy guy lately. Do you still have plans to keep doing the daily show? Now to get really predictable, what was it like working with Jim Carrey? Finally, could you please give us one good reason or more why people should buy Outlaw Volleyball?
Oh, man.
That was, yeah. Well, you know.
This interview not happening, I think, was the greatest thing that could have ever happened to you.
So, hey, now you're spoiling it. No. So, yeah, like I said, I email back and we get a time slot and, oh, my God, this is actually going to happen. And so June comes or whatever. We get to E3. It doesn't actually happen. The three of us saunter up to their booth or whatever it was, the desk, and say, we're here for our appointment. And I basically get told we're not on the list. And I guess truly they didn't actually put us down in their spreadsheet. And I'm not about to make a scene about it because I'm not that kind of person. So that was that. And
you know what? I mean, if this happened today, you could pull out your smartphone and open up the email and be like, no, see, here's where our correspondents.
Yes,
you know.
If only there were smartphones, for fuck's sake.
If only.
Oh, we had no such thing. Not even a tablet or not even a fucking Palm Pilot in my hands or anything. So I just kind of turned around and I probably walked around huffy for a while, but we just had to keep rolling on with the rest of our E3 adventure. Now, here's the thing is that I'm wondering, were there actually any Carell articles from any outlet after this? I mean, was he even actually there?
Maybe they didn't.
I could not find any real evidence of anybody, not even IGN or fucking Maxim or anything interviewing Steve Carell at E3 2003. I never found anything like this. Maybe it's in a print magazine somewhere that I haven't found, but as far as the internet goes, I haven't seen anything. But maybe, you know, the reasonable assumption might be that Simon & Schuster Interactive didn't want to mess with tiny websites of a few kids running the show, and they wanted to have the celebrity talk to Maxim or something. You know, maybe it really did show up there, and I just wasn't aware
of it. You know, it's possible they did put us on the list, and then, you know what, we should check out their website. And they went to Crunk, and they saw Joel's motion gravure articles, and were like, oh, no, we're going to accidentally lose these guys.
Are you saying Outlaw Volleyball wouldn't have the word Poonstravaganza? Come on.
No.
We were in the palm of their hand. Okay. No.
Joel was in the palm of his hand.
No, Joel didn't do anything. It was me writing the stupid thing.
I know. I'm joking.
It was just his head. No, I'm just letting the audience know that it's me. I'm the actual pervert. So. But yeah, smartphone. You bring up the smartphone, and I feel like that sort of parlays into what I was going to say, which is that today it seems like PR isn't as picky because you see these videos of Zoom interviews with stars for movie press junkets. And they're with sites or people you haven't heard of. Pure nobody fan sites just who worm their way into a Zoom interview with Tom Hiddleston or whatever.
Wow.
Right. Have you not seen these sorts of things?
No.
In the sorts of marketing lead ups to movies? Okay. Well, it happened a lot, especially in the pandemic, but even now it keeps happening because it's easy to get these people in and out of a session, I suppose. But there's also, in terms of video games, there's people like streamers who will gladly do sponsored streams as part of the marketing campaign. And there's also companies that will basically hand out download codes like candy if they know that you're a streamer and you can prove it to them and all that stuff and get some, you know, basically free coverage out of it that way. So, in other words, I think we were small and hopeless enough to pretend to care about Outlaw Volleyball, but we were just kind of in the wrong time for that to be recognized, I think, by this big publishers, marketing department.
You were ahead of the curve, baby. Yeah. Or in the case of volleyball, ahead of the serve.
Yeah, so ahead of the curve, we didn't even get a chance to talk to Steve Carell. And
yeah,
it's still kind of a bummer. I'm sure I would have come up with some better questions.
In all my years of doing E3, I think I was only, I mean, they don't typically give the freelancers a lot of interviews, a lot of big interviews, certainly.
Yeah.
The only big interviews I got were, no, there were three. There were three big interviews I got. I don't know if we need to do these E3s in any specific order, but.
Go ahead.
It was, Kojima was the biggest, Hideo Kojima with Dave, and that was Dave Smith. Thank Dave Smith, just being a cool dude, had a Kojima interview scheduled for 1UP, and, you know, I was his underling, and he's like, hey, do you want to tag along to this interview? Yeah. I'm like, okay. And he's like, you know, prepare two or three questions. If we have time at the end, you can ask him some questions. Like, okay. So I did. The Toshihiro Kawamoto, the Cowboy Bebop guy. That was with James Milkey. And we had lunch with him, too, which was kind of fun. They just brought in some bentos in the middle of the interview. Like, all right, break time. Time for lunch.
I remember later on, I got roped into another Milkey interview with some Atlas people. Some Atlas developers. Now, wait a minute. I don't want to diminish what you're saying. I totally get it. Huh. Were there interviews where you were not an underling that you could put under that umbrella?
Oh, I was about to get to that. Yeah.
Okay.
The only one, I think, and that was Koji Fox.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Because they knew I was the big FF. Yeah. Yes. Because they knew I was a big FF11 nerd. So they're like, okay, Alex, you should do this one.
Right. It was him and was it Sage Cindy?
Sage Cindy.
The other producer guy who ended up leaving after a while, but he was one of the guys who blew up the FF14 1.0 and had to leave.
Oh, yeah. Bye, Cindy. Now, I bring this up because there were two specific ones. There at least two. I may have blocked some of these out. There were two interviews I just got robbed of because I guess somebody else on the team wanted them more.
Yeah, yeah.
One of them I think might have just been a crossed wire, and I was supposed to interview someone at Konami about the new DDR. And I showed up to the Konami booth, and I'm like, hi, I'm Alex. I'm with 1UP, and I have like a 2 o'clock interview with such and such. And they're like, well, there is a 2 o'clock interview from 1UP with such and such, but it's already happened because your guy got here early. And it was Patrick Klepek, and I don't...
Yeah, this was just, you and me as well.
Oh, you were there too?
Okay. I was there with you.
Yeah, and like they put us on, and I think it was just a crossed wire because I don't think Patrick Klepek's the kind of guy who would like, I'll get that interview. There first. Somebody very clearly stole the Eiji Aonuma interview from me because I showed up there and they said, we had you, and then 1UP contacted us and changed. They said that somebody else would be coming. I'm like, oh, okay, cool. I wish they had told me.
Yeah, great. Yeah. That's the thing. It's just like, gee, I wish you had told me. Just like I wish you had told me I wasn't on the list after all for Steve Carell. But yeah.
Yeah, that, you know, we could have saved some time here.
I do want to jump back to the FF11 interview because you, me, and Joel.
Yes.
I had gotten the idea that Square Enix was really persnickety with interviews, and so they weren't going to let somebody like us from Crunk Games into the thing. I know you were doing it for freelance professional stuff, but in terms of like trying to get all three of us into the thing, I was just like, wait, you know what?
Yeah.
If anything, let's just say Joel's our photographer.
Yes.
Joel, you hold this camera. Joel, you just stay silent and take pictures. And
oh my God.
The thing is that in the end, the Square Enix people were actually very nice and very accommodating. Yes. They didn't really give a shit. They just let us into the Final Fantasy XI interview, maybe because it was FF11 at the time and it wasn't a big focus for them. But nonetheless, they just let us in and there was no problem at all. But I was just like, listen, you're just a photographer, okay? I mean, I might have done that a couple other times too, but it was just like, yeah, Joel's here. Joel, if Joel is anything on the staff, he was our photographer. So, yeah. There you go.
Wow. Yeah, I'm surprised we didn't make him wear like a little hat that said press on it.
Yeah.
Just to complete the illusion.
Should have been a Photoshop at least. I take the blame for that. I'm sorry. Okay. Okay, postscript to the Steve Carell thing.
Yes.
There was an Outlaw Golf 2, and who took over for Steve Carell was Dave Attell. And if that had ever been an interview opportunity, I think you and I would be more adamant to make it happen. because yeah. I think we enjoyed Dave Attell, maybe even more so as far as the Comedy Central personalities go, because he's hilarious. And
he is. He came. I transferred from Bethany College to Ohio University
just to see, like, Dave Attell. Oh no,
no. But the month after I transferred, he came to Bethany College, and nice. I missed yeah. him because I'd already my buddy Brad went, and he said it was a great time.
Yeah,
because we were huge fans of Insomniac at the mm-hmm. time, which was just a fun show.
And I imagine he might be this is all just me making things up, but he could have been a better interview in general. Now, not to diminish Steve Carell. Steve Carell's actually a pretty nice guy from all the other interviews I've seen of him over the years. He keeps it pretty down to earth. He doesn't seem to be, you know, caught up in his fame or anything. He still looks like a regular guy and still acts like one. But in terms of, like, getting some gold out of the interview, I think Dave Attell would have been good. If that ever happened, it never did, whatever.
I think that Steve Carell would have been cagey doing a video game related interview.
Exactly.
Dave Attell, I feel, is going to be comfortable everywhere. Because, like, if you've ever watched Insomniac, one of the you know, takeaways from that show is, oh, this guy is comfortable anywhere with anyone.
Yes, exactly. At all hours of the day.
Yeah, exactly. Like, he'll have a good time. It doesn't matter. He's just trying to have a good time like you are. You know, let's have a nice conversation about outlaw golf too.
Precisely, yeah. But yeah, that was one of our many interview busts at Crunk Games. Of course, I also tried to interview an email interview with Alton Brown.
That's right. On,
wherein I emailed his publicist and said, hi, we'd like to have an interview with Alton if possible. And the kind woman wrote back, sure, what's your deadline? And I said, doesn't really matter. Whatever, we're flexible. And I never got a response. And I think that might have been another case where the person went to the website and saw me.
Yeah.
No. That
Maybe
is also,
not.
I think this was before the Carell thing came up. And if you're wondering what you might ask Alton Brown on a video game website, I can't tell you.
Yeah. Did we even get that? Did we plan that far ahead?
Absolutely not.
I think. I tried to come up with some questions, and it was just like, have you played a video game? I think that's as far as I got.
Which, as you can see, I tried to also ask Steve Carell. It was kind of tongue-in-cheek as well. It was kind of that us trying to be funny again. Crunk Games, ha ha ha. But it's just like, well, we watch Alton Brown a lot on TV, sometimes together on the phone, you and I. So wouldn't it be nice if we got someone we admired on an interview for a website?
Yes, that's right. It's because of Alton Brown that I went through my cookie baking phase and I made sad cookies for Caitlin that I ate myself.
The fatal flaw, of course, is that we only cover video games on our website.
Thank you, Alton. It's fine.
Yeah. Well, anyway, that's kind of an introduction to Joel by way of also E3. Joel was a great help at E3. He did help us get some really great, funny pictures. He was a sport, as I've said before. He didn't really mind this. I think he appreciated us taking him to E3, of course. Certainly no one else would. It's not every day someone just has a friend who's just like, hey, you want to go to E3?
I believe he also came with us to see Matrix Reloaded.
Oh, sure.
Because that was that trip as well. And I think that was the first Final Fantasy concert, right? Or was that the year after? That was 4? Okay. Wait, that was Dear Friends, and then More Friends was the year after.
Yes.
Okay, because they couldn't fit all the friends in the first concert. There were so many friends.
Well, there were 6 of them on NBC, and then that just filled the whole thing up.
Oh, boy. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Got some bad news about that.
What? I know the show ended, right? Yeah, I know. I knew that.
Oh, you know. Okay, all right. Okay.
Yeah, no.
All right, that's all. Yeah. That's all.
The show's been over for a long time. I know that. And there's the ring drop.
Yep. Oh, we got it. I have to constantly be fiddling with my hands. Is that bad?
A little bit.
Okay.
Yeah, but we can also spill over into talking about other Joel pictures if you want.
Yes!
2004 was the one with him with his head in the pillow and me doing a fake sort of, I'm going to hit you sort of move.
Oh, yeah. Yes, yeah. Our whipping boy.
Yeah, our whipping boy. That's another good term to use. For some reason, he wore a tank top as his undershirt, and so there's a good shot of him just looking like white trash in our hotel kitchenette. just fantastic pictures all around, really. But yeah, there was a classic game museum at E3 2004 with a text adventure running on a little computer. Someone wrote the command "Hump Joel," and the text parser said, "I don't understand that."
Neither do we, text parser.
No, neither do we. Maybe that's where we should end, to be honest.
I think that's a pretty good cutting off point. We still have a lot to cover yet in the next episode. 2003 was a busy year.
Well, I did want to make sure we talked about E3 2003 because our E3 adventures are special sorts of things. And so they have things surrounding them, of course. But I did also wish that Joel was here so we could have a more voluminous episode to talk about him and his life. Hope I'm not speaking too much for him, but I know that he went on to have a family, and I believe he moved to America, or his wife was American and moved to Canada or something like that. And so I hope he's just doing well in general.
Yeah.
I don't really know much else about him other than he still plays a lot of World of Warcraft.
All right.
All right.
Sure.
And I know that from Discord. Messaging him on Discord, trying to get him to do the show. It's like, could you get off Azeroth, please? Trying to talk to you. Just kidding. I said this to him, but I will say it in public as well. Thank you, Joel, for letting me bug you to try and get you on the show. Nonetheless, again, I hope you're doing well. I appreciate you just being a good sport again and letting us have all this wacky time with you and about you at your expense. And now it's pretty much all immortalized on a website that we still have up after 20 years. Except for that pervy one that I took down. There was also plans to do a feature called Rumble Joles's, based on the game Rumble Roses. That never got as far as me photoshopping the logo. I'm not sure what that even would have been, but I had to photoshop the logo, and so there was an intent to do something with it. But yeah,
I think it's hard. It's a tongue twister. Rumble Roses, I think, was one of the first games that just like gave me an indefinable just sense
owner?
Of. No, that's very definable.
Okay.
Just a sense of discomfort. Like, this is really gratuitous. And I don't know. I don't know if I need that in a game.
Ironically, it did play well as a wrestling game.
Okay.
Which was the funny thing about it. But yeah, the sequel was bad.
Oh.
Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
Rumble Roses XX? What's it called?
Yep.
Okay. No, just games like that always strike me as like, why don't you just watch porn? Like, it's right there. It'll save you some time. And then you can get back to playing, you know, games that are designed to be solid experiences.
Would it surprise you if I let you know that the director of Rumble Roses went on to be basically the creator of Love Plus?
I am unsurprised. Yeah. Well, that's more of a game than I guess Rumble Roses is, right? I would consider that more
of an
experience.
Sure, but it is one of those games where someone might say, why don't you just look at porn? Instead of trying to date a girl in your DS.
That's also how I feel about like all hentai games as well. It's like, what are you trying to do? Just like, your ultimate goal is to jack off, and there's a much faster, like, we can expedite this process. You don't have to waste time and money doing this.
Sure, well. Sometimes people just like certain aesthetics. What can I say?
I guess. like dating sims are different. Visual novels are different. Those are based around a story. I get those. But like when the ultimate goal is to just jack off, like there's, you can save time and, you know, make it happen.
You and the captain can make it happen.
Oh no.
Yeah. I'm not saying any of that stuff is all worth it, but you know, sometimes it's fine. I mean, like, as long as you're not turning it into your identity, I think it's fine. I mean, look, in terms of Crunk Games, I was completely willing to review Dead or Alive Extreme Beach Volleyball, purchased that and wrote about it because it did turn out to be a decent sort of volleyball game and sports game and stuff. But also, yeah, with the sexy stuff, it's just kind of there. That also was 2003 in a nutshell, wasn't it?
Yeah, wow.
Yeah.
What a year.
Yes, indeed. But yeah, I think that'll do it, right? You got anything else that came to mind?
That's all that I have for this part of 2003. I have to go eat a big sandwich.
No other E3 memories from 2003?
I typically have a very good sense of memory. I remember commercials from 30 years ago, like I saw them yesterday. I have trouble telling the different E3s apart because I only went to three and they all run together for me. So I don't know what 2003 was, aside from what you've told me in this episode.
Fair enough. This was kind of a half-joking lead-in anyway to get you to remember your Gary Coleman meetup.
Oh, was that 2003?
Or how about the picture of you playing the game Dolphin Blue? This is photographed from the back while you are wearing an E3 media cap backwards.
Oh, God. Wait, let me see. Oh, wait, no, hang on. Wait, I have the thumbnails in front of me here. Wow, yeah, that's me and Joel.
Okay. Oh, wow. Yeah, Gary Coleman was 2003. There it is. I found it. Yeah.
Cool. All right.
Not promoting Postal 2, I believe.
Look, I found the text we wrote into FF11.
Yes.
Air, please. Let's go ride the bong around the hotel.
Yeah. Someone, I don't know who, just decided to write Jerk City lines into FF11.
Who would do that? Hang on. I have one last thing to add. There's a photo of me in here that I just noticed of me wearing a Parappa the Rapper hat.
Right.
And I'm throwing up a gang sign. I'm throwing up a W and M to mean Walmart.
Yes.
And I don't know when I saw this, but it was a few years after this was posted. This image was posted on the blog of a deaf guy. Who was making fun of it because it looked like I was trying to do sign language and I had no idea. I wish I could find this post because I love it and I failed to save it.
Okay. Well,
and it was just roasting this image mercilessly.
Right.
And it could have been fun to revisit, but I think it's lost to the ages.
Oh, darn. Well, it's not lost on crunkgames.com, at least.
That's
the actual
right.
photo. So there you have it. All right. Well, that was fun. Thank you, Alex, for joining me again for another episode.
Anytime.
A game site about nothing. Next time, I think, will be a lot less jovial. we're going to talk about an episode where I was an idiot. And should be fun. Anyway, next time here on the show. Thank you, everybody, again, for joining us and supporting us to be able to make and have you listen to this show. And that's a game site about nothing. We'll catch you next time. Bye-bye.
Bye.
We'd stay up all night till morning, surfing online, browsing the pages. We'd strike gold if we dug deeper. Maybe a file, maybe a lyric.